Hi, it's Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. We wanted to catch up with a few of our previous guests to see how they are doing in this quarantine, from which, thankfully, we are slowly emerging. I'll have a few different guests on to talk about the current state of affairs in our city, including the protests and the state of our country. So here is our conversation with Boston Emissions and Jel Wood, where we catch up on the radio industry, what the new normal will look like for live music in Boston, and how she hit the ground running once everything went down with COVID.
You busy tonight, Angel? What do you got going on tonight for you?
Oh, I thought I'd go out to a buffet and then go bowling.
Yeah?
Well, when you think about what's probably the most dangerous thing that you could do right now, it's probably, aside from going to an emergency room, would probably be a super buffet.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about those not even being allowed anymore, those super
buffets. No, not at all. I mean, imagine all of those places that have made all their money on those all-you-can-eat things.
I know. It's a sad, sad state of affairs.
You're looking a little like Letterman right now, Chuck. Like, retired Letterman.
This is more like I woke up from under a tree. Yeah, and I was going to go get my beard trimmed, but they're not doing facial hair trims yet. So, all right, well, let's get started. First of all, it's obviously a very sad day with the murder of George Floyd. Talking about music may seem, a little beside the point with that kind of news story going on, the horribleness of that. They did come out with a third-degree murder charge on
one of the officers
did this,
right.
So that's good. One of them, yeah. We'll see if there's other charges coming. It's certainly a sad day. So obviously, this has been tough for everybody with COVID and the shutting down of music venues and, Above the Basement, and also Boston Emissions have been doing their part. We've been trying to do our part to let musicians play for us. We've had, probably around 70 or 80 musicians come on Above the Basement. And I know, Angel, you've been having people on as well. So it's, trying to give a place for people to go and listen to music. So
I really miss talking to people. It's hard.
But so let's talk about what's been going on. So there's a lot that's been going on. I almost want to back up a little bit to a lot that was going on for you before this whole coronavirus started, which was the layoffs and the furloughs that were going on for all the people in radio. And so that was just happening just before this all happened, if you want to talk about that for a minute.
Well, the structure of, much like big business, in other backgrounds or industries, everything's changing. And what's happening in radio is, they're structuring everything so differently that less and less people occupy studios are, on the air. Different companies have different ways of doing things. And what these companies are doing is they're getting by with less people.
Yeah.
Cost cutting, I guess.
What was it, February, I guess, when that was happening?
Yeah.
So that was tough. Now I'm wondering now with the return now to people online, people now, not the return to it, but certainly more people are engaged online with the live video and listening to their radios now.
Yeah.
Since they can't get out of their houses. Do you think this is going to change anything for radio?
I'd like to say yes, but I doubt it. Because what's missing is that local element. Which is what makes radio so great, that we can sit here and talk to each other in real time. That's what makes radio great. The localism of radio hasn't been really important for a lot of companies or programmers on larger scales. I mean, I know a lot of people who work in radio locally, and they're great people. They've just adapted in a different way. They recognize the importance of, being in Boston, being from Boston, and talking about all of the Boston landmarks and street names and all of those things. But it's become sort of secondary to programming in a lot of ways. Not for everything, but for a lot of things.
Tell me what happened to you once the COVID hit us. What did you do? Did you have a plan? Did you kind of take things as they came? It seemed you hit the ground running. Because I watched what you do, and you weren't off the air at all, from what I can tell.
I wasn't
moving forward.
No, I wasn't. It was all very fluid. I mean, I remember back in March when everything was starting to become very serious. It became very evident to all of us because, you know, we're watching things move through Europe. And once it really touched down here for us in the Northeast, it became very serious very quickly. So we all acted. I remember people were starting to cancel shows. And I know that people were taking some hits for that, but people were being proactive from the get-go. I had a show in mid-March in New Hampshire, and out of, you know, all concerns and otherwise, we were like, yeah, we shouldn't bring a bunch of people from Massachusetts across the state line because we just don't know what's happening. But then so much changed from mid-March to where we are now. Where are we, like day 75 or day 80 or something of being from home? I just wanted to try to connect with people. People are still making music. They're still doing it.
They certainly are.
And they're still trying to be active and be creative however they can. And some people didn't miss a beat. They just took what they were doing on the stage and took it to their living rooms or their basements or their attics or their showers.
That's right, their showers. Poor Will Daly was stuck in his shower for ages and ages and ages.
And raised tons of money not for themselves, raised tons of money for people in our live music community who had nothing.
I mean, Will Daly is just one of many who did that. Certainly he was a superhero doing that in Club Pacific. A lot of people were doing this kind of thing, and it was amazing to see that. You can see a question here. I don't know if you see it on the screen. From James McDonald, buddy. What are the silver linings in this for Boston Action Music and the opportunity from this? Well, certainly there's the ability for musicians to hunker down and start writing.
Yes.
Right? I mean, they're being very prolific in that manner. What else do you think there's an opportunity here that we may be missing?
I think it is provided opportunity for people to reach out to each other in a different way. I know that there are a lot of artists who really feel uncomfortable promoting themselves, which I totally get it. But I try to encourage bands and artists to look at themselves as more of a business or more of a brand. Songwriting is very personal. I understand that. But to step it up and let more people know about what you're doing can be difficult. And I try to encourage them. So I feel like there are a lot of those artists or bands who have been able to, because of the situation, because of the condition we're in, have been able to say, I'm going to stream tonight. They're performing, they're sharing their music, but they're also keeping a presence for themselves. So maybe the silver lining to some of this stuff is that people are feeling more comfortable exposing themselves in this kind of setting.
I mean, and I definitely noticed that when we first started doing the Together at Home sessions, some of the musicians had never done a streaming session.
Yeah.
And it's very foreign to them because they're sitting in front of a camera playing, and you know, they see that people are watching, but they have no reaction to when they're done, and it takes some getting
used to.
It is hard. People like me and you, I think, might be a little more used to it because we're used to talking into a microphone and just recording it with nobody in the room as we're doing that. But for a musician, they need that feedback. But I've noticed the people who did it very early in the game, and they're still doing it now. And they're pros now. They know exactly what they're doing. They they adjust quickly. But it certainly is a foreign way to communicate with your audience. But certainly it gave them that opportunity to have a presence on the socials. And I'm sure they've gotten a whole bunch of new fans and people who maybe wouldn't have heard them without this.
I agree. I think it's been really a learning experience for all of us, but artists for sure. I've watched, I don't know if you've watched any of Walter Sickert's stuff from The Bunker, Walter Sickert of Walter Sickert and the Hammer Broken Toys, but there's never a moment where Walter isn't giving you some kind of, he's really interesting. I find him to be an amazing talent. He's an artist, he's a performer, he's a songwriter, but he's just really entertaining.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to see. And I assume eventually this might be the new normal. So, another issue that's been coming up. And it's a major, major issue for every city, but certainly Boston is at the top of that list, is the problem with venues. Certainly the recent demise, or hopefully maybe not, you never know, of Great Scott. I know they're trying to figure that out. But so many venues, never mind the restaurants, they have a whole problem too. They're really hurting as well. But venues have a kind of a unique problem in that this is where people go to gather, listen to music, not just for the people listening, but for the musicians themselves. What are your thoughts on just the general calamity that we're facing right now?
Oh, it's hard. Where live music was really the first to go, and it's going to be the last to return. I don't want to seem so doomy about that, but I don't see any other way around it. Our whole livelihoods are about gathering of people in close proximity that we cannot do right now. I know a lot of people really want to go and see live music. All of us do, and we miss it. But I know a lot of people at the same time are nervous because of all of these things, because of the unknown, because we have really, there's no certainty when things will open up, what that'll look like. So much of the burden will be on the staff and the organizations. And that's all really concerning. And to mention Great Scott, which has been a very successful, it's a small room. It's been a very successful room for the people who own the space to just decide that a live music space isn't viable anymore is horrifying. But if we can rally behind Carl Lavin and the people who are trying to basically back it, they're basically asking people to invest in Great Scott with the hopes that we can get the space back. It can be a viable room once again. I don't know. I'd love to talk to Carl more about it in detail and know what mountains he has to face. But one way we can help is we all have the opportunity to give money to the Great Scott Fund. There are a lot of challenges, and there's going to be a lot of heartbreak ahead, I'm sorry to say. There is an organization, a national organization, that has been working hard. It's the National Independent Venue Association, which has been working hard to get through to politicians to help them recognize that subsidies for live music and arts are very important and are valid.
The venues were having problems. I mean, it's always just a fight to keep going, to keep it going. And the cities don't make it easy necessarily for the venues to, you know, to be able to survive in these spaces. They're trying to get people to, what do you call those people? Lobbyists. We're trying to get some lobbyists going.
Yes.
To work on their behalf. You know, another thing that I know you're very disappointed about was the 2020 Rock and Roll Rumble. Very disappointed it's not going to happen this year. I know you had to cancel it, and then you pushed it off, and then you had to recancel it. Is that what happened?
Yeah, we tried twice. It's not in the cards for us. That's what I get for having two Rumbles last year.
But
it's,
obviously, it's what tough. Are you going to do?
We've had... you know, there's 25 bands. Actually, there's 27 bands this time around because we had the original 24 plus the guest band Set Fire. It just wasn't going to be able to happen. Once I saw all of the national tours just take everything off the table, and knowing that every single venue, running a venue is thankless, and most businesses like that are, you know, hand to mouth, and nobody has a big, you know, savings account. So when you're forced to shut down for 3 months, it's a question mark for everybody. I mean, I'd hate to see any of our small venues go away. I mean, I don't want big venues to go away, but they have far more backing if you're backed by a corporate entity.
You know, part the magic about the Rock and Roll Rumble is that it's not just about the sound, the music. It's not just about like the quality of the songs, how well they play. It's their presence on stage, and it's the audience reaction. Yeah. It's the whole package.
It's about it's about feeding the audience, feeding off the audience. It's about the band having their people there. Once the vibe in the room, it becomes electric. There's no other real way to explain it. It becomes electric, and the bands are feeding off of that, and the fans are throwing it at them. I just want the bands and the fans to just be as close as possible, and we can't do that. So until we can do that, we can't have a Rumble.
It's a fantastic event. Next year we'll be able to do this.
I am planning on 2021.
Excellent. So last question, and this is something that I see you post about this a lot. So you still have your Boston Emissions show that you do, right? Are you still doing the Wednesday night show as well?
I help on the town with Mikey D.
On the town of Maggie D, right?
Yeah, I help support them because there's Tufts University is closed down, as most universities are. No one can get into the WMFO studio. So the crew that's been doing On the Town for a number of years, Jill Simkiss and the great people there, have been basically compiling things throughout the course of the week. And Joel puts it together, and they're able to broadcast it on Wednesday nights. Oh, cool. Despite the fact that people can't be there live in person, I mean, who knows how long that's going to go, but there's going to be a show every week.
That's great. Well, this is all good. I'm glad we got to talk about this, and hopefully soon we get to see each other in person. I really appreciate you. I appreciate what you do. Where can people listen to you?
BostonEmissions.com. Everything's there. The show is also on most streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Radio.com, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn, Radio Public.
But Boston Emissions is that's the
main name. BostonEmissions.com. That has everything on there. How to contact the show, if you want to email me, if you want to send music, if I can help you somehow, I'll try.
Angela, thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate
your Chuck.
Time.
And, it's good to see you. Nice Letterman beard.
Thank you. It's going to keep growing until someone can trim this for me. I'm not going to do it myself. Otherwise,
eventually,
I'll ruin it. Okay, well, take care of yourself, and we'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Thanks so much. Okay. Be safe, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Angela, for all you do for music and musicians in the city of Boston. You can see what she does at bostonemissions.com. You can also go to abovethebasement.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. From all of us at Above the Basement, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Be safe. And remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique.